Well, welcome this morning, brisk day. Today we're going to be continuing with the Gospel of Mark, and today we are going to be closing off looking at the second chapter where Jesus declares that he is Lord of the Sabbath. And we did a number of weeks ago have a look at the idea of the Sabbath, but we're going to be looking at that in a little bit of a different way this morning. And just remind you that the Sabbath is something that is really a spiritual reality as opposed to a natural one. And while we set aside a day to worship the Lord, that day is set aside as a reminder to us that we should be doing that continually on a daily basis, turning our thoughts and affections to our Lord. Let us pray. Reading this morning is from the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, reading verses 13 and 14. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honourable, and shall honour him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. From the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, reading verses 23 to 28. Now it happened that he went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and as they went, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. And the Pharisees said to him, "Look, why do they do what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" But he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry, he and those with him, how he went into the house of God in those days of Abiathar the high priest, and ate the showbread, which it is not lawful to eat except for the priests, and also gave some to those who were with him. And he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath.'" A reading from the Heavenly Doctrines, from the Teachings of the Church, from the work The Arcana Celestia, paragraph 10,360. A person, therefore, who knows that the Sabbath serves in the highest sense to mean the union of the divine itself within the Lord's divine human, can recognize the meaning of statements made so many times in the Word regarding the Sabbath, such as the following in Isaiah: "If you turn your foot away from the Sabbath so that you do not do your own will on my holy day, but call the Sabbath delight honorable to the holiness of Jehovah, and honor it so that you do not do your own ways, nor find your own desire, or speak your own words, then you will take delight in Jehovah, and I will convey you into the high places of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father." Anyone who is acquainted with the internal sense of the word can see plainly that the Sabbath here is used to mean a state in which a person is joined to the Lord, thus a state when the person is led by the Lord and not by self, that is, a state which exists when good resides in him. For being led by the Lord and not by self is meant by turning one's foot away from the Sabbath, not doing one's own will, not doing one's own ways, not finding one's own desire, and not speaking one's own words. The presence of the church and of heaven in that person is meant by the promise that he will be conveyed into the high places of the earth and will be fed with the heritage of Jacob. And the truth that the Sabbath denotes the divine human in which there is a union is meant by the Sabbath being called my holy day and delights honourable to the holiness of Jehovah. Jesus, Lord of the Sabbath. We've discussed on a couple of occasions how the idea of the Sabbath in the Gospels provides us with a gateway into a rich understanding concerning the spiritual evolution of people out of natural self-centeredness into a higher spiritual state of love. Of the 10 occurrences of the word Sabbath in Mark's Gospel, 5 occur in this chapter, suggesting that the idea of the Sabbath is central to understanding the spiritual contents of what we have here before us. We know from the first chapter of the book of Genesis that God is said to have rested on the seventh day after spending 6 days in acts of creation. The new church understands these acts of creation over 6 days as referring to spiritual, not literal, physical or material phenomena. The communication of spiritual truths by ancient peoples was made through stories that illustrated spiritual principles and realities using physical, material objects of the natural world. These ancient peoples had an intimate of the spiritual principles and realities that natural material objects correspond to. So when they spoke about the progression of 6 days during which divine acts of creation took place, they understood that these days represented nothing else than spiritual states of people or spiritual states that we all pass through as we look to be reconnected with the source of love and wisdom. They understood that the things created at the natural plane of existence corresponded to things in people's internal universe or world within the realms of their own thoughts and affections. To come to the Bible, to come to the stories found there from this perspective, line from the surface concepts of literalism, sets the ground for entering with understanding into spiritual laws and principles that govern the operation of the thoughts and affections of our internal worlds. If the 6 days of creation represent spiritual states or states of spiritual progression through which people pass, as the Lord works within them to make them more loving, then the seventh day or the Sabbath must also represent a spiritual state. The Judeo-Christian tradition having a day set aside for the worship of God and contemplation of the spiritual matters is important in principle as it reminds us of the need to take ourselves away from the secular side of life, sacred. But in and of itself, the setting aside of 1 day a week for such things is merely representative of a deeper spiritual reality. That is, that there is a need for us to create a Sabbath state within as often as we can, regardless of which day of the week we happen to be in. The activity of spiritual life is not limited to a single day. It is present with us if we have our spiritual sensitivity cultivated in order to sense it with us. New church spirituality is centered on the acknowledgement that Jesus Christ is God Himself and is the divine human. Therefore, what we see in the stories of Jesus' life in the Gospels is the expression of divine love and wisdom and its activity made visible in a form we can grasp with our senses. All people, if they have access to the Gospel stories, have by means of them a greater potential to understand more fully the operation of divine love and wisdom if they approach them with an open mind and a humble heart. Let's take the story from our Lord's life that we are looking at today. In this story, we see yet again Jesus having to deal with the criticism of the behavior of his disciples by the religious leaders of the day, the Pharisees. The basis for the criticism was that his disciples, in plucking the grain, violated Jewish Sabbath laws. In the 4 or 5 centuries before Jesus came on earth, the Jewish religious teachers debated at length about what observances should be made as regards the Sabbath. 39 articles were formulated prohibiting all kinds of agricultural, industrial, and domestic work. A Jew must not carry on the Sabbath even so much as a pocket handkerchief, except within the walls of the city. And if there were no walls, it follows that he must not carry it at all. Even the preservation of life was a breaking of the Sabbath. A man could not peel a fruit. A woman could not knead her dough. A boy could not wash a dog. A girl could not plait her hair. An old man could not tie a knot in a piece of string. No one could write or cross out that which had been written. Forbidden, except that a man could go and to the help of a bogged cow or a trapped sheep. A Sabbath day journey was about 7/8 of a mile. To go any further was to break the law. One could not even light a fire or put a fire out, forbidding even any fire to be kindled for the preparation of food. Violation of these laws were technically punishable by stoning and had to be obeyed no matter what. Even healing could not be performed on the Sabbath unless it was a matter of saving a person's life from imminent death. To those who define spirituality in terms of external religious observances, Jesus presents a real problem. When the spirit of the law is forgotten and all that is left is its letter, religion becomes harsh, unforgiving, and burdensome to its adherents. Jesus' very presence as a living embodiment of divine laws or principles set on edge those who professed to be the keepers of the law, because he operated from the spirit of the law, from divine love, from mercy, compassion, and goodness. Whereas they, the things of religion, to advance their own egos, their power and control over people in a spirit of self-centered, self-seeking ambition. The fact is that the disciples plucking the grain illustrates for us the true activity that is to be performed on the Sabbath day. And the Pharisaical response illustrates an attitude those who emphasize the external aspects of religion over its internals, an attitude that resists having externals changed so that they can better serve the Lord's own purposes and reconnecting people to himself. We know our emphasis is in the wrong place where a rigid adherence to external aspects of religion prevents us meeting genuine spiritual needs in others. The externals of religion are there to support and serve expressions of love, mercy, and goodness. They should never rule in our thinking to the point where they restrict our ability to share the Lord's love with others in meaningful ways. External aspects of religion need to be held lightly and are best regarded as garments subject to change, particularly where they no longer communicate internal things in a relevant way. The internal things of religion, love to the Lord and loving our neighbour, are spiritually non-negotiable aspects of religious practice. This is what the Lord's response to the Pharisees highlighted. He throws things back on them, inquiring as to whether they had read of the account where David ate bread reserved for the temple priests. The Lord would have knowing full well that these experts in the law would have been well familiar with this story. He puts the heat on them in order to try and reveal to them their own motivations. They are left, if they will not change, in an impossible position. They cannot justify David's actions without giving sanction to the disciples' behavior. And if they continue to condemn the disciples, then they are left with no option but to condemn the actions of David, which would have been unacceptable. The Lord's choice of this story from the life of David makes interesting reading in the light of what we're looking at today. I'm going to read from the Word two passages, one from Leviticus, where the law is outlined, and the other from Samuel, which was the event in David's life. From the book of Leviticus, chapter 24, 5 to 9, we read this law. And you shall take fine flour and bake 12 cakes with it. 2/10 of an ephah shall be in each cake. You shall set them in 2 rows, 6 in a row, on the pure gold table before the Lord. And you shall put pure frankincense on each row, that it may be on the bread for a memorial, an offering made by fire to the Lord. Every Sabbath he shall set it in order before the Lord continually, being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant. And it shall be for Aaron and his sons, and they shall eat it in a holy place, for it is most holy to him, from the offerings of the Lord made by fire, a perpetual statute. And the story from the life of David is from the book, 1 Samuel, chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. Now David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech was afraid when he met David and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one is with you?" So David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has ordered me on some business and said to me, 'Do not let anyone know anything about the business on which I send you, or what I have commanded you. And I have directed my young men to such and such a place. Now therefore give what you have on hand. Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand, or whatever can be found.' And the priest answered David and said, 'There is no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread. If the young men have at least kept themselves from women.' Then David answered the priest and said to him, 'Truly women have been kept from us about 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in effect common, even though it was consecrated in the vessel this day.' So the priest gave him holy bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread, which had been taken from before the Lord, in order to put hot bread in its place on the day when it was taken away." When we consider Jesus' response and what was going on in the story where the priest was willing to hand over that bread, the message is one that religious observances exist to support the expressions of love to the Lord and our neighbor. They are useful in their ability to lift our thought and consciousness toward higher spiritual things. And in lifting thought, we must remember that it is useless to have our thought lifted and not to engage our will to do what the Lord requires. In the highest sense, David represents the Lord himself. And in this case, represents the Lord in a state of hunger. Hunger is a basic physical need, and as such corresponds to a basic spiritual need. All needs involve the fulfilling of a desire of some sort. In the case of hunger, it is a desire for goodness. Physical hunger tells us that our bodies desire to be filled with the goodness that can be extracted from those foods we have available to us. The New Church teaches that every bodily structure, function and activity has a corresponding spiritual counterpart. In fact, we teach that our physical desires stem from spiritual causes, for the body exists from the spirit. Physical hunger, then, is caused by spiritual need. Our spirit's desire to express themselves through acts that express our love. Someone who lives to love the Lord and their neighbor are spiritually nourished when they are able to do useful things for others in the world looking to that end. To do this, their spirit or love needs a healthy body through which to act. Hence, part of the spirit's expression is to ensure that those things on the physical plane exist in a state to allow this to happen. Physical hunger is the result of the spiritual cause or purpose. Its purpose is to provide a physical body through which acts of love can be performed to others. Purpose drives all activity, and purpose or the end in view is a spiritual phenomenon, not a physical one. A healthy spirit desires goodness because the divine desires to give its own goodness to all people, and it does this through others. So the desire of our spirits for goodness, to acquire that goodness, can be more fully expressed when we understand that desire comes from an even higher level, higher purpose, a divine purpose. So it is that David comes to the temple in need of food. Spiritually speaking, a person's spiritual hunger, particularly a hunger for what is good, flows in from the Lord. With David's hunger, what we see is that some state of life that a person enters into has meant that their ability to acquire goodness has been hampered. When we feel this, our lack means that we are unable to express our love in ways that truly satisfies us. Because this love has its roots in the Lord's own love, can you see that when we are in such a state, the spiritual hunger we feel as our own is in fact not ours at all, but is the Lord's own hunger within us, His hunger for our good and the good of others. It is now making itself felt within us. David, as one representing the Lord, comes to the temple, to the recognized center of spiritual sustenance, looking for goodness. Goodness that he might be strengthened to continue on his journey. Bread, traditionally, is a simple food for most diets in the world, and therefore represents the fundamental support of life, which is divine love, or divine goodness, that continually flows into the deepest recesses of every human soul. Ahimelech's willingness to hand over the showbread, a bread consecrated to the Lord, draws a stark contrast to those who stood and accused the Lord's disciples of breaking the Sabbath laws. The act of handing over the bread contains a recognition of appropriate values in regard to the internal things of love taking precedence over the external things of ceremony and religion. Now it is interesting that showbread in Hebrew literally means the bread of faces or the bread of presence. The bread is a symbol for the fundamental goodness we receive from the Lord. Now the face corresponds to what is internal with a person. The face expresses our thoughts and emotions like no other part of our body can. And where our external expression matches what we feel or think within our minds, then the face reveals the true person. We are truly present. As this bread is consecrated to the Lord, it was a symbol of the Lord's presence with the people of Israel. It was His goodness expressed in a symbolic form. The New Church teaches that the face of the Lord is nothing other than love and mercy. Thus we could replace the term bread of faces or the showbread with a spiritual meaning, that is, the goodness of love and mercy. Goodness being spiritual bread and love and mercy being the faces of God. Whenever we act from love and mercy in our dealings with others, so we invoke the presence of the Lord. And surely, this is what true religion is all about. Whenever we consciously seek to act from higher heavenly motivations, the Lord makes Himself present with us. And it is this presence of the Lord that creates a Sabbath state of rest and peace for our souls. Such a state makes us receptive to receiving truths or ideas or concepts about how love can be expressed in more appropriate ways. And it is to the degree that we do this that determines the quality of our humanity. It was highly appropriate from a spiritual perspective that the disciples should be plucking the heads of grain on the Sabbath. Grain, of course, is the principal ingredient from which we obtain what is needed to make bread. And the plucking of the heads of grain speaks of taking that which contains goodness and using it to satisfy our hunger or our love for others. Grain corresponds to truth, for truth always contains what is good if it is in fact true. The principle being illustrated is this. If we want to be more loving people, then we need to take the truths we have in the Lord's Word and our doctrines and use them to guide our interactions with others that we are in relationship with. If we do this sincerely and look to the Lord for insight, then the spiritual principles we hold to will be transformed into forms of goodness which will not just satisfy our own hunger, but will satisfy the hunger of those we are in contact with. The Pharisees understood none of this. Whenever external religious practices take the primary role in our thinking regarding spiritual expression, the presence of true spirituality brings about a sense of internal conflict. The word is very clear that divine order is for externals to serve internals. Jesus put it this way regarding the question of what was allowable on the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. The English translation here does lose some of the nuances found in the Greek from which it was taken. In the Greek, if we read this literally, it says, the Sabbath through the human became, and not the human through the Sabbath. Now, to fully appreciate the principle the Lord is laying down here, we need to remind ourselves of what the word means through its use of the term anthropos, or human. The New Church teaches that the Lord is the only true human and that we become human only to the degree that we approach His image and His likeness. The Lord is divine love and wisdom, which means that we are human only to the degree that we are able to receive His love and wisdom into our being and express it appropriately. Characteristics of the nature of being human or a true human being are love, mercy, compassion, and goodness. We now see the truth of the Lord's statement when He declared Himself to be the Lord of the Sabbath. Essentially, what the first part of this statement is saying is that the Sabbath comes into being through the human. That is, through the expression of love and mercy. And this is what was lost on the Pharisees. For them to be human or to conform to the divine ideal was attained through the fulfillment of external religious obligations and the keeping of religious traditions. When our thoughts and affections are directed towards the Lord and spiritual matters, we enter a true Sabbath. It is very important in the work of spiritual growth and development that we develop a sensitivity to the states we entertain within our own minds. If we truly desire to be more loving people, then we have to take hold of our own inner self-talk, criticism of others, sense of being right, desire to get back at others, holding internal accounts, seeking revenge, and the like, and bring these into subjection to the higher spiritual laws of loving the Lord and loving our neighbor. As soon as these traits appear within our thinking and our feeling, in our interactions with others, we need to look to the Lord for strength to resist them, regardless of how strong our justifications may appear to be. To view others in a negative light, not being able to see the good that is in them, is the operation of our own Pharisaical attitude within. To seek to look only to the good that exists in people is to look to the Lord in them. It is to enact mercy and compassion and to bring into being a state of peace and rest, which is what the Sabbath day is truly all about. Amen.